This is the Land and Legacy Podcast, brought to you by Whitetail Properties Real Estate. We're your hosts, Adam Keith.
And Matt Dye. This is your weekly resource for habitat management, wildlife management, and recreational real estate. We hope you guys enjoy the show. You know, a lot of you may not know, but Vortex is not just an optic company. They've got a full lineup of apparel. You may see us, Adam and I, Frank and Kyle, wearing, strutting our stuff in the Vortex wear at some of the videos. It's comfortable. It's built for the outdoorsmen, those who love to be in the field. They have anything from socks to shirts to hats to gloves. You name it, they've got it. They get you outfitted. Guys, go check out Vortex Apparel online at the Vortex website and use the code LEGACY20 at checkout to get 20% off of your Vortex wear gear. You won't be disappointed in the product itself. You look cool strutting your stuff out there, and you'll actually stay cool too. A lot of awesome stuff, guys. Go check it out.
All right, guys. Welcome back to another Land and Legacy Podcast. It's the third week of November, so everyone's wondering, when is lockdown done? But we are going to get right into the heat of it today, talk about some different phases of the rut, and talk about some success that has been had. Finally, we've got some client successes rolling through the door. We covered one from South Carolina just a week or so ago. And now coming and hailing from the state of Arkansas, we've got another big deer down. And I'm excited to share that hunt with you guys and the story of success from Mr. Zeke Barrett himself, a Whitetail Properties agent in North Arkansas. And he's on his home place. He's on a property him and his wife own and live on, and he's trying to do right by the management, not just strictly wildlife, but there's some cattle focus involved in this as well, and he gets it done, and I'm excited to share this hunt with you guys, obviously, for the picture. Very nice, wide, framey deer, so it's going to look incredible as it's coming to him, closing the distance, and he does get it done. But there's some challenges. There's some steps that he took to make sure that he's going to have success in the future with those varied goals of him on his home place. So I just want you to hear that story. I want you to soak it in and just kind of take in, you know, the steps that other people are taking to have their own success and kind of pave their own way. And, you know, kind of just changing the lens that they look through of wherever they're at. That might be Tennessee. That might be Georgia. That might be Kentucky or Alabama or Mississippi or Pennsylvania. It does not matter. You can do things differently. You can make some big property management decisions, overhauls like Zeke has done, and change the way that you hunt in relation to those habitat changes and see success. So here's just yet another story. Been talking to a lot of clients through text and email. And my goodness, we've got more success stories coming. And I'm excited to share them because they're more evidence of, hey, things are going right. Things are happening. An 8.5-year-old deer just got harvested. And I know another client in Big Timber, PA is on a hunt for a very old deer, but a very large deer, and seen numerous encounters. Like hunting can be difficult, hunting can be tough, but it's the grind that we're all here for and love. And you're going to hear part again, that story, that grind with Zeke himself from early portion of the season when deer showed up to making the play and killing him in early November, so or mid November. But regardless, could be a good episode. Sneak peek. I may have dumped one myself that you're going to hear on an upcoming podcast. So that story is going to be unfolding here in a couple weeks. You're going to want to check that one out. I'm excited to be able to share it and thrilled for a wonderful mid-November hunt, close range. You're gonna love it. And I'm gonna love to share it. But without further ado, guys, let's jump in and hear from Zeke and get his story on a buck he calls the Wide Eight. All right, guys, I've got Zeke Barrett, Whitetail Properties out of Arkansas. Zeke, how are you doing?
I'm good, sir. How are you this morning?
Honestly, I'm really good.
I say you are.
I'm really, really good. I had a very interesting morning. I happened to harvest a deer and saw another really good deer. So I'm on cloud nine, but we're talking about a deer you harvested today, and my story will come later, but I'm excited for you getting it done on a family property and basically a homestead family property, whatever you want to call it. But dude, I'm here for the story. I haven't gotten like the full complete story. So for those listening, this is kind of new to me, but Zeke is not just a client, but a good friend. And you'd come up and turkey hunted up here with me this spring and had a fantastic time, harvested a bird, and we've just been able to share some outdoor experiences together, but also just enjoy the conversation of you progressing through a management plan on your property. And so anytime a client or friend is able to harvest the deer, it's that much sweeter for me to be able to hear it. So I want you to share your story and me to kind of hear it first time and everyone else hear it as well. So man, let's hear it unfold. Kind of I guess take us
Sure.
back probably from how you arrived here at this parcel, because obviously real estate is what you do. So property moves, what ended up, how'd you get here, and take us into like your goals then too.
So, man, it's such a, it, I'm just gonna say it up front, it's such a God thing.
I love it.
It the way this all panned out, like if you rewound 5 years, you'd go, hold on, this is like you couldn't script this, right? So it's pretty neat. We sold our family farm. I sold our family farm here in North Central Arkansas in Boone County, and my grandpa had put that farm together back in the 60s. And like a lot of family farms, it just came to that time. Right. And there was me and all my siblings, my four cousins, my dad, my aunt involved. So it was a big, big deal. It was a really large farm, it was very unique. It was a difficult sale. And but that took place finally after 3 years on the market. It was a little, it was just a little under 4,000 acres. So it was a really big chunk. And so I had hunted that place my entire life. Well, when we sold that, my wife and I really were, we wanted to continue that legacy. We wanted to honor my grandpa and my dad. And so I always wanted my own particular piece of dirt. And so we started looking really hard. Not really, we weren't quick to move on anything. We wanted the right piece, and location was big for us. Both, still had both the kids at home. And so, man, it's so wild. So I got a call from my childhood Bible study director. He was it was through a group called K Life, and he was my we had a 7th grade boys Bible study. And anyway, so he was in charge of that. So I'd known him forever, and he called me and he said, "Hey, I actually want to sell a part of our family ranch," which is so crazy that it happened to be, it was a quarter mile from where we were currently living on our house and small acreage that my wife and I had here in Boone County. And so, we just hopped in the side by side and went over, and I looked at it. And, at that point it was right at 90 acres. So put it on the market. And the more I thought about it, I thought, man, this, it was really more of a cattle farm, and I'm more of a hunter at heart, but had farmed in the past. And so we looked at it again from a different perspective and thought, man, we could make this work. We could build here. This is a great location. So I approached him, told him I had a personal interest, and So then we purchased that original track. And then fast forward about 6 months, and I told him at the time, right, part of the deal was that I would get a first right of refusal on the rest of the ranch if it ever came up. And he told me, yeah, that's fine, but it would be years and years and years, I'm sure. Well, lo and
Sure.
behold, like, man, 6 months in, he's like, hey, think we're going to sell off another chunk. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you got to be kidding me. So I go to the bank and I'm stealing and borrowing, you know, just like, come on. So we purchased another, you know, roughly, let's call it 100. And we got right at 208 acres total. Okay. So just a little over 200. And so the build process, we've got our house started and all that. Well, part of my plan through this whole deal is I really wanted to figure out how in the world can I turn this cattle farm, you know, utilize it for production for cattle, but also for, you know, really maximizing wildlife, specifically deer, turkey, and quail. And that's when I think you and I became acquainted through Whitetail thereabouts. And then about a year or so after we made that total acquisition, that's when Land and Legacy came into play. So we began to put together a plan. How can we maximize the cattle output, but also bring in our deer, turkey, and quail? And so you guys came out and we did a full-blown management plan. And so that's kind of how all of this, you know, now I'm going into probably 2022, 2023 is when that all started to come to fruition. So you know, you guys came out, we did this pretty elaborate plan, and it's remarkably in depth. That was the thing I think I was most impressed by is, you know, the audio files, the mapping, and the whole nine yards. It gave me a really good step-by-step direction to, hey, if we and you were open to my goals as well, right? Which was great. So we knew where I wanted to take my pasture ground for cattle management, and then also tie that into how can we let that cooperate with turkey, but then let's look at what we can convert over to old field, take your little bit of timber that we do have, improve that, put in some bedding thickets, put in some TSI units. And so then we did our first project in 2023, where we did a really heavy TSI on probably 45 to 50 acres. We did a TSI unit. We did several bedding thickets. And then we followed that up in 2024 with some control burns. So that's kind of what got us to this point now. So we have more winter projects coming up.
Now the work continues that you since you really started. And that's the thing I really appreciated about working with you is, man, some of the things like North Arkansas isn't really thought of as like big giant deer, tons of management to be done. You see a lot of ground, and a lot of it is very much catered towards oak hickory dominated forest, a lot of cedar encroachment, and then just fescue pastures. And
That's
so
it. Yeah, that's the makeup of the ground. Yeah,
that's not the
that's it.
recipe for success. Or elevated success, higher success when it comes to whitetail hunting and turkeys and your goal. So like going into it, it's like there's always some challenges typically with like the understanding that okay, things that I'm going to have to do are going to really change the look and appearance and the feel of a given property. And you see a lot of properties, dude. I mean, you're very successful at what you do, but you cover a big area, and it's like part of my job was to try and explain like, okay, we're gonna try and create something that like you've probably rarely ever seen, and it's gonna take some time to get there. It's gonna take some capital to get there, but like we're talking about a woodlot. We're talking about, there's not an example like within a 5 square mile of what we're trying to create. It's gonna look and feel very different, but like you also received the information, processed it, started to do some work on your own and understood, okay, like the scale of the change, and you trusted the process though too. And like that takes a lot because you're living on this property. You are gonna have to see this every single day. And that takes a lot of not just trust, but acceptance of like Yeah, that is the right step forward. That is going to change things dramatically, but it's going to be for the better because you had a lot of that big timber chunk on the south facing slope. It's like the south facing slope in Arkansas, it's hardwood with tons of cedar encroachment. We need to cut it hard, and you're gonna have a fire on that thing, my friend. And you said,
Did we ever?
okay, I'm ready. And so
But you know,
luckily.
Matt, like it in regard to that, man, like I think that's just some of that is it's twofold. Number one, I think it's just a mental status that you have to get to where you look at whatever it is and go, okay, I don't know everything. I've hunted my entire life, killed my first buck when I was seven, infatuated with it, right? H had an archery shop and a gun shop. Hunted as hard as anyone that I know, and I did had have to kind of adopt that mentality of like, you know what, it's okay to say I may not know everything, and I'll to this I don't know everything about real estate. I mean, I consider myself a professional in the market, but I don't know everything about it. There's always something different, and then the other thing is too, just be willing to say, not only do I not know everything about it, but am I willing to put my, let's call it, you know, the old cliche, money where my mouth is. And I'm
Sure.
like, it's one thing to get the plan. It's another thing to do it and watch it take place
Absolutely.
and just go, you know, this is going to be different. It's going to be a process. But I think some of that is just understanding that anything worth having in life is just, it's going to take time. You know, it's just like it's like a good marriage. It's like anything else. It's just, you have to put in the time, the effort, and go through the grueling parts of it to get to where you want to go. And I knew that this was an undertaking a little bit daunting because, as I mentioned, it's predominantly just a cattle farm with a couple of chunks of timber. And I'm like, how are we going to create ideal habitat for deer, turkey, and quail? And so that was, you know, I just said, okay, I'm going to do it. And I'm going to take a step of faith. And, you know, we're just, it is what it is.
Yeah, and you're stepping right along, dude. I mean, like I said, you took the plan, and regardless of, like, let's say how the quality of a plan is or not, I always tell people it doesn't really matter unless it's executed. And
Yeah.
you're
Hello.
I mean, I can prepare, I could etch it in a gold tablet. It doesn't matter unless it's actually implemented. And so there is an element of a lot of action that needs to take place to then see those results. And so what are some of the big projects beyond like that big heavy TSI, a couple bedding thickets and the prescribed fire that has occurred there? Anything else? Because there is that balance, that definite balance from a standpoint of farming and a standpoint of, okay, how are we going to make this cattle operation on the property, grazing restrictions and different fo grazing forages too. You have warm season grass, native warm season grass stands. You have a mix of Bermuda and you have a mix of cool season fescue, and then a Sericea problem. So it's like, okay, but we have a total number of cows that we have to manage and make sure there's enough grass, and but then how do we move wildlife across this thing?
Sure,
And guess what? There's also quail there too. So, like,
that's right.
how do we
Yeah.
fold all this thing together to accomplish that?
So I, you know, the major, as you mentioned, the major project we did was the TSI first, and then we followed up with prescribed fire, and those went really well. We ended up burning about 60 acres, and then we also implemented spraying. So I had Brock come in, and he has got a couple of big drones, and so most effective way to spray my place, no question, because of the rugged terrain, right? We've got a lot of elevation. We've got areas where it's just, you know, some areas were grown up where it just wasn't realistic with a pull behind sprayer. So we
Yeah.
did drone spraying, and so that's really helped. We've done that twice now, and it really helped knock back our Sericea in our cattle lots. You know, as you and I discussed early on. On in our old field management, because of our desire to keep those native broadleafs, that Sericea is going to be a little bit more of a long-term project to knock
Sure.
out over the course of several years. And that's just where I'll reiterate the utter importance of that patience, man, because I am not that guy, right? I don't like waiting on things. I don't like, if a new bow comes out, I want it yesterday, right? Like if I know that I'm going to go on a hunt, I'm like that second grader waiting on Christmas morning. A week feels like 7 years to me. And
Yeah,
so
you're packed up. The
when,
truck is packed a week ahead of time.
man, that's right. Yeah. Like I'm ready to go. Well, man, on our spraying, it was like, I wanted to see that immediate, just like, okay, 2 weeks later, everything's dead and everything's growing that I want to grow. And so the old field management part of it is definitely taking some patience, because I understand that's going to be a process of probably three years to really get ahead of where that Sarisa reared its ugly head. But the drone spraying was super effective the second round, and it really made a dent. And as you mentioned, I've got some Caucasian bluestem that does really well through the hot season, the drought. I've got some Bermuda up on top, and then I've got three different stands of fescue. So we've kind of got a little bit of a plan for rotation, and how we're making that work with the wildlife is that where those are and how I move those cattle, we've kind of tried to direct the bedding thickets, the cover, and those food plots and travel corridors where the cattle pasture really won't affect that quite as much. Not saying that those deer and turkey aren't going to use that, because you and I both know that they will from time to time. But really, you've done a great job at helping me kind of, okay, how are the deer going to use the topography, and how are they going to use the management, the habitat management that we're doing in conjunction to where those cattle pastures are?
And that's the big thing. I think this is a perfect situation where you can have your cake and eat it too. You could still raise cattle. You could still check that box and do things right. Because there's always, just about every cattle farm, there's always areas that are less productive or areas that have the potential to be highly productive or highly influential from a wildlife standpoint. And when that comes into play, it's like, okay, hey, we might rob Peter, pay Paul here, but we'll make it up elsewhere on the cattle ground. But we got to give this corridor, we have to maintain or create a corridor here, and it's going to help facilitate this hunt strategy as well as air quote safe passage from this wood block that's managed to that wood block or that bedding thicket to this one over here. So yeah, we did that, and the typical cattle-minded person would have been like, what are we doing here?
Oh, no
I get it,
question.
like, it looks and it's going to feel and it's going to be managed differently, but dude, you understood it first and foremost and accepted it and are putting it into practice. And that's the really cool thing to see, not just like this brainstorm on paper. It's actually coming together. It's actually being put into place. And now, right, you're seeing it in action when you're able to hunt and partake in hunts from whether it's turkeys or whether it is just hearing more quail on the property or harvesting the buck that you harvested this year. So it's just continual process. And dude, like we talked even before the podcast, it's like, I'm getting ready to come back down and spend another half day with you to, in some ways, probably reinforce the importance of some things, but also to then take note of maybe some changes that I either didn't foresee or that deer are doubling down and doing something that maybe was thought of, or land has changed, or parcels have changed, or you have access to different things now that we need to relook at some things, right? Land management is this constant evolution of changing. If we just maintain that open mindset of continual learning, like you said, with your real estate business and practice, like I like to think, yeah, I know a lot, but I don't know everything, and I'm open to learning and watching and observing and seeing more that I can apply these different things to. Well, we're going to get a better product at the end of that, and that's what this next trip is going to be and accomplish is. Hey, you've done some big projects. You've witnessed a lot of deer moving across the property. So what now does that look like? From should we adjust? Should we change something? Should we, again, double down on something else? We get to make those observations together. I'm excited for that.
Well, and some of that too, right, is understanding. And from day one, you were receptive of that. Is, as you mentioned, we live here. Well, my front yard is basically an area that my wife really loves to manage. She keeps it mowed. It's her favorite view from the kitchen window, and so on and so forth. So there's probably 15 to 20 acres that we could and probably should be doing something totally different with. But it's understanding that this. Every aspect of land management is all how it fits to your life,
That's
right?
right.
And so, aesthetically, prime deer habitat that we're creating is probably not the most beautiful thing that you've ever seen, but aesthetically, our front view, which is very important to her and to me both, is knowing that, hey, I may not get the maximum benefit of the wildlife in this area, this 15 to 20 acres, let's call it. But I'm okay with that because it's important for me for other reasons. So I think, understanding, all right, maybe there's some things that we were going to implement there, which is again why you're coming back, right? Because I've had neighboring situations change. I had things that turned out way better than what I thought. And I've had other things change.
Praise God by that.
So that's right. Yes. Actually made a really good friend through a cantankerous situation that's turned out to be great. And then also I've had some land right bordering me that was a great thicket before that's now been cleared and it's in cattle pastures. Like, whoa, hold on. Everything I thought that was going to affect this, let's say 20 acre chunk of my farm is now totally different. Okay. And those deer that I saw traditionally there have totally shifted back to the south to a different area that I didn't expect because that other ground got cleared. So, I guess the point is, right, like you mentioned, we're going to evolve. We're going to be willing to look at things differently. And that's why I think it's important for us as landowners. It's okay to get someone else involved, have someone help you think outside the box. Because again, traditionally, I had a mindset on this farm, man. It was food plots and it was feeders and it was, I'm going to do this and this and this. And that basically was just like a I just had to go, okay, I'm going to get a second opinion and I'm going to have somebody help me look at this with a different set of eyeballs. Because and that may be it could be something as simple as this. And I know it's a funny analogy, but what if it's something as simple as this? You're doing a remodel on a house. Well, you may have a certain way, okay, I'm going to do this, this. Well, guess what? You get somebody else that comes over and they go, hey, actually, this is not a load-bearing wall. And if we do this and this, it's going to open up this space, make your bedroom big. And you go, oh, I never even would have thought about it that way. So it's the
Or
same
that's
thing
going to
with
save
land.
you 20 grand on a reno.
100%. Yes.
Oh
And
my
that's the way
gosh.
this is, right? Like it doesn't have to be, you can make the, I have a client, for example, that had you guys come down. He's got a big farm he bought for me over 1,000 acres. And he went in and he made so changes that I've only done probably 25% of what I've needed to do so far because this is coming off in bite-sized pieces. Okay.
Absolutely.
He did probably 80% of what you guys wanted to do within about a 8 to 12 month period. He had the resources, he had the equipment, he had the time, and that's okay. So you this may take me 3 to 4 years to get where I want to be. And it, but if you're willing and you have the capital, you could do it in 6 months. You could do it in a year, right? So that's, I think my point is it, you can adapt and make it however you want.
You guys know your deer herd inside and out? Are trail cameras telling you everything you need to know about it? Well, possibly not, but we've got an option for you. We're teamed up with Midwest Deer Surveys, Jack Hudson, and we're putting together a new service option for you where Jack comes and flies and does a thermal drone survey, and then the team here at Land Legacy dissects it all, analyzes all that information that was gathered through the survey, puts it all together in a video and a report, and sends it back to you and says, hey, here's your herd survey, here's your analysis, here's your population dynamics, here's what your harvest recommendation should be. But on top of that, we're really going to dissect and look at why deer are using what they're using, given those time frames in which the survey was conducted, the slope aspects, the cover types, the fact that there might be lacking cover, why they're doing what they're doing. We dive into all that and really break down what the survey showed. Not just, hey, you have X amount of deer and here's where they're at, but why? We really want to share that knowledge with you guys. So if you're looking for more in-depth understanding of your deer herd and harvest objectives, contact us. Let us know. You can go to a website, www.landlegacy.tv, click on the consulting tab, and you will find a section at the bottom of the page to send us a note, an inquiry, and we will get with you on what that looks like from a cost standpoint so you can get a thermal survey and an analysis of that survey done by the team here at Land Legacy. And we're excited to offer this, guys. It's new for us. But if you want to know more about your property and the deer herd that's using it, contact us. Let us know. We're here to help.
Yeah, for sure. Now that you have a direction, you have a plan, you have a visualization, it's like now we just need to be able to execute and see this thing come to life. But right, yeah, you take things at your own pace. Now, kind of, now that people have got a good overview of the farm, some of the projects that you guys have worked on, some of the goals, take me to this year, because this summer, you were singing the blues when it came to,
Man.
I ain't got no bucks. I ain't got no bucks, man. What's going on? Man, they're gonna
Dude,
shoot
I was
with them.
borderline depressed,
I
man. I
know.
was.
It's easy to be. It's easy to be.
So again, because of the changes we made, like I had really had we've had a lot of deer over the years, and we've had decent deer numbers. And every year I would get a picture of a good buck. But it was inevitable that he was just, you could tell. He was just passing through, right? Like I had one little corner down on a thicket where I would get a couple of deer in velvet and then they would disappear. And then I would have a buck show up, you know, middle of October, be here for 2 or 3 days. I'm like, hey, all right, and then disappear. And it's just been, you know, basically 4 years of little, you know, dinks that had 2 to 3 year old deer, small eights, things like that. And this year I saw fewer does, I saw fewer deer. But what I didn't realize, man, is that, you know, camera placement and changing how I was approaching all of the manipulation we had done to the habitat is I didn't adapt my approach to watch these deer and go where they were based on the changes we made. So yeah, man, midsummer, I was late summer, I was like, golly, man, this, you know, I wasn't really aggressive with my cameras and I was just going off what I was seeing. I made it a point to stay out of a lot of areas, just not be as involved, you know, traveling through the farm. And so yeah, man, I think I was talking to you in July and August, just like, ah, they're not a freaking buck on my farm, man. This sucks. I don't know what you guys have got me into, right? But that all changed the 1st of September when I went in and put up some cameras and started to do some surveys in a few spots that you know that I knew you had picked out for us for stand locations and so on and so forth. Yeah. So you know it was actually, and I'm just gonna dive right into this. It was the dove, it was opening, it was the velvet hunt.
Okay.
And I had, again, no anticipation. I had no expectation because I hadn't seen anything. So what I did is we've got a great friend and a good client down in Central Arkansas who invited us down to his annual dove hunt. Never dove hunted at all, but he's invited me multiple years. And I was like, you know what, babe, let's go. So my wife and I packed up. Well, right before I left, I went out because you can bait in Arkansas starting September 1st. And so I thought, well, I'm going to go to four strategic spots. I'm just going to, you know, put out a little feed, stick up a camera over some mock scrapes around some feed, and I'm going to see what we can't see. And I'm down in Central Arkansas at this dove hunt, and I open my Reconyx app, and there's this big deer. And I was like, what the crap, man? Where did you come from? And right on the eastern, there's an east-facing slope that goes off of our timber lots where we did a TSI and a burn, kind of a little finger that comes out on the edge of a field, some old field management. And And sure enough, it was actually right next to a stand set that I had put up. And there he was, bigger than day. He was in daylight, and man, it was so wicked cool. I immediately started calling him the Velvet Eight because he had this huge 8-9 inch chunk of velvet that he didn't shed that was hanging off the end of his left beam. And there he was, just kind of shocked me, you know. So of course I missed the velvet hunt because I
Dove
was dove hunting. Yeah.
hunting.
So that was a long 3 to 4 weeks of waiting, and man, he was just very consistent. And I knew had a pretty good idea of where he was bedding. I knew it was either in a new bedding thicket that we had cut on the north side of the place, or back at that thicket along the edge of the hay meadow, kind of on the eastern part of the farm. So I knew he was right in that, you know, 15 to 20 acre area.
Which is good core, kind of centrally located. Like you had options to be able to
I
hit.
did. Yeah, I did. You know, how this started is obviously, if you recall, just crap weather when season first opened. You know, really weird winds, and so I was playing the wind, and man, I would hunt the evening because of the wind, and he would show up in the morning. I would go back in the morning, and he would show up in the evening. And so I was very, because of how consistent that he had been, I was really more reserved than probably what I normally would have been, you
Sure.
know.
You knew that like it was going to be a matter of time and you didn't want to force it, essentially.
Well, precisely because a lot of the reason why too is I'm very fortunate that in that area, right, my two neighbors that join me in that corridor right there do not bow hunt. So I knew I had the month of October, well, the first 2 weeks anyway, before our alternative season. And so I was very cautious for a couple of weeks. Now, as it got closer to the alternative firearms, which used to be the muzzleloader, and now Arkansas made some silly changes, and you can hunt with a, you know, 350 Legend, 450 Legend, bolt action, you know, 8-round mag, whatever. That's a conversation for another time, but they ought to just call it the early rifle season. But anyway, so you know, I was pretty confident up until that point. He was still consistent, but here's what's weird, man. In that time frame, he totally shifted. He abandoned that spot. Like, just, I mean, went to it, it just went to it went to nothing right there. And so I kind of started scratching my head, and I'm like, what? Like, I'm talking 7 or 8 days just disappeared. And I thought, oh my gosh, he shifted, he moved somewhere else. So maybe someone did stick him, you know. So I kind of had about a 6 to 8 day period there where I had a little mini panic attack. And so what I did is I came up the valley, back in the central part of the farm, actually closer to my house, and I put a camera and a mock scrape off of the edge of a little food plot that I had that was, it kind of created a V. I know this is not making any sense, but if you looked at the aerial, there's a cedar, kind of a steep hillside that's thick still, and then that timber unit in the middle of the farm. And so boom, there he was. And I'm like, okay, well then over that, let's call it the next week, I figured out what he was doing is he had shifted totally to where he was bedding in the thicket down by the creek, coming up the central part of the farm. I started getting pictures of him up here by my house. And so then it became about a 10 to 12 day cat and mouse chase. I had a wonderful stand set that I could only hunt with like a northwest wind. Even an east wind, I could occasionally because I knew exactly where he was coming from. Well, I did not have a stand set here by the house. And then, as you and I talked a little bit before this recording, there was also a perfect spot where you and I had looked at in the previous year to where I could set up a stand on the edge on the south side of his bedding thicket, hunt it with a north or a northwest wind that would blow off down into the creek and the bluff below. Well, I was out walking a property, and it was a new listing, and it was really rugged terrain. I was hiking it. It was I was about 3/4 of a mile into the hike. There was some bluffy stuff. Came all the way back around, and I was coming up some of these rock faces, and just I had actually strained my calf a couple of weeks before. And you know, this is an hour and 45-minute drive from my house, so I'm sitting just totally still in the truck. Get out. throw everything on, and I just start hiking. So everything was
Yeah.
cold. I didn't stretch. Lo and behold, I popped my calf, literally tore my left calf muscle.
Oh, ouch.
Man, like I'm talking, I'm laying on the ground and I'm going, all right, Jesus, you got to get me back to the truck. Made a
Oh, wow.
makeshift crutch
No kidding.
out of a cedar limb and got
They said
myself,
selling real estate was easy. Come on.
dude, I'm telling you. Well, look, I mean, if you're going to go out and stand at the edge of the property, take five pictures of timber
Yeah,
and you
that's
know,
true.
whatever. But if you really want to get in there, look at the big timber, look at the rock faces, look at the, you know, this one had right next to the White River. We ended up selling that property in 3 days, by the way. But anyway, so
No big deal. No big deal.
all of that, man, came back, went physical therapy, put me on crutches I was on a cart, you know,
Yeah.
for about 10 days. Well, in this period, man, I could not get a stand hung. So
Right.
no way for
On the
me, you
south side
know,
of that bedding area where
dude,
he was
and you know
off.
how much, you use a calf when you're hanging tree stands, right? Because you're pushing off of those things.
Just
There was no way
slightly.
to do it.
No.
And dude, just like, and here he is, he's coming right by my stand every evening, about 30 to 45 minutes after dark.
Yep.
And I actually had one encounter with him on the 19th. I was in this stand right here as I was talking, right below next to that food plot. Had 2 bucks in the food plot. It started to get dark. It was right at that. Like, I was literally like, man, I got 2 minutes. If this
Yeah.
doesn't happen, it ain't gonna happen. And I hear deer walking to my right. It stops. And all of a sudden, snort wheezes, about scares me out of the freaking tree. 10 yards to my right, he walks out. It's so dark, even with my pen light on, I can't even make him out. So I had
Yeah.
to hang my bow up, sat there for 2 hours, let him clear it out, hiked out of there. All the while knowing, dude, that if I now keep in mind, I'm in a walking boot and I'm barely climbing this stand, okay?
Yes. You're pulling yourself up, actually. You're just
literally pulling myself up.
Yeah.
But you know, knowing, my gosh, if I had a stand
Yeah.
400 yards back to the east, I know I
They
would
would.
catch him before daylight, right?
Yeah.
Before dark. So anyway, that, you know, all of that's going on in the background. And so fast forward, I had another incredible encounter. Keep in mind, there was another morning where I was fixing to go down to the stand, opened up the Reconyx app, and he's literally right here, 125 yards from my house,
Yeah.
at a feeder.
Yeah.
So I end up going out on the back deck and was watching him through a thermal monocular that I had,
Yeah.
and I watched him cross at my house, 30 yards from my house,
Oh,
going
well.
right back down that saddle back behind the house to that lower stand.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that went on. And then fast forward to October 31st, Halloween, and this buck, it's a slow morning. Super disappointed. I thought it was going to be all kinds of jacked up, handful of deer here and there. Again, wonky weather. It was getting warm, and I'm getting ready to get down, and it's about 9:55, and I'm like,
Yep.
I'm going to get down at 10. And so I hear grunting coming from behind me, and you know, 80 to 100 yards or so, and it's pretty aggressive and it's consistent. I'm like, well, that's not a little deer, you
Yep.
know, and so I'm watching back behind me, and mind you, I'm about 27, 28 feet up in this cottonwood, and there's a big backdrop behind me, right? So I had like cedars and vines and all. I hung that stand specifically because where they cross and where they come in is always out in front. It's around that food plot and it's to the draw to your right. Well, this buck's up on the hill behind me through all of that stuff, and he rounds the corner of this little finger of timber that's sticking out in this field, and man, he's nose to the ground grunting,
Yeah.
just
Woo.
trotting every step, just grunting.
Yep.
And I'm like, oh my gosh, just bigger than day, here he is. So I grab the bow, spin around, I grunted a few times, he stops, looks down, comes on a beeline right to me, comes all the way down, dude. I'm looking at the top of his head at like 8 to 9 yards from the base of this tree. All he's got to do is walk around 10 steps in front of
Yep.
these cedars to my right, and I can stick him. And he's standing there looking. You know what he's doing. He's looking for that buck.
Yeah.
No buck, no buck, no buck. Okay. Turns around, goes right back up the hill, nose to the ground on that same trail, grunting.
Dang.
I snort wheezed. He stops, starts coming down, looking, turns around, goes right back up into the cedars. He loops all the way around and comes out in front of me, crossing the food plot at about 80 yards. And snort wheezed again. He's looking, and he just will not commit. Nose back to the ground, jumps the fence, crosses my gas line, goes into my timber block. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. Well, here's what's crazy. He shows up about 45 minutes later on the app, right in front of that bank spline.
No.
Crossing, no kidding. 11, like right at like 11:15.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, it's on. It's
Man,
on.
and crosses right there, goes right back into the thicket.
Yeah.
So, man, it here's what's crazy. Then it goes dead. I do that's so from the October 30th, I did not have a picture of that deer. Saw him on the 31st,
Yep.
right? When he looped around. That was the last picture. And thank goodness, man, I just struck up a great relationship with my neighbor to the east, and great dude. We text and call almost every day. And
Nice.
he, man, he it's been so fun because he goes in and out of that area every day for work. And so he was giving me buck reports, man. He's like, hey, I saw a good deer on the timber joining you over here on the south, and saw a good buck driving out in your hay meadow to the east and all these things, right? So, well, he saw that deer
Yep.
several times throughout the next week. And
Yep.
so it gave me a peace of mind knowing, and what it was, man, he was locking down in that thicket with does. And so
Exactly.
almost every time that he saw that deer, he was with the doe. And he's like, at one point, man, he drove past him. This was like November the 4th or 5th. He drove past him, and the buck was bedded down with a doe at like 15 yards in the woods and never even got up.
Jeez.
Yeah. So I knew the deer was here. I knew he was living, but man, it was frustrating because he was just not moving.
It's hard when they're super consistent on scrapes and then all of a sudden it goes cold and dead. And it's like,
Jeez, dude.
wow, I just had so much momentum and it feels like it drains you. But that's welcome to the rut and trail cameras.
Well, and here's the other thing too, right? Is I was also committed to not going in and shifting or moving anything to risk busting him out
Yeah.
because my neighbor was giving me good info. So I thank God for that, because otherwise I might have got desperate and gone in and moved some cameras around or gone and set up in other areas and run the risk of bumping him out. So the key for me with this deer this year was just patience, as hard as it was, because I wanted to kill him so bad with a bow.
Yeah.
So, all right, based on that information, I ran in on October, excuse me, November 3rd, which was it was the Sunday of youth weekend, youth rifle, and I set up a ground blind close to the corner of my property where he had been seeing him.
Yep.
And put out a camera there. And I actually threw out just a small bag of feed just because I was trying to get them to stop right there to see, okay, is this e never even went back in there.
Yep.
And then Friday before rifle season opened, which I think was this that was the 7th, I opted not to hunt that blind because I hadn't seen anything there at all. And I went right back down to my stand below the house right here, hoping maybe he was going to break loose and come up that valley like he
Sure.
had been doing before. And man, I got a picture. I got out of the stand at 9:15 because it was hot and miserable. I don't know if you recall that week, but it was
Oh, yeah.
atrocious. At 9:45, he was in front of that freaking ground blind that I had put up. And I'm like,
Sounds like a
are
whitetail.
dude, I mean, like, come on. Okay, so that's the Friday. So hunted that evening in the ground blind, nothing. The next morning, opening day of gun season, I had showings that I had some property that I had to show
Yep.
on that Saturday morning. But I went ahead and snuck out, and I just went back with my Benelli on the ground
Yep.
with a bipod, and I just sat up on the ridge back here behind my house, overlooking this area where he had been moving back and forth. It was kind of it's a great view of that entire valley.
Oh, yeah.
Had a great encounter with a little 2-year-old buck I call Wheezy, because he. Every time he comes into a food plot, he's snort wheezing and chasing off little bucks. He's just this dinky little eight. And he's just mad at the world every time I see
Yes.
him. Came all the way up 25 yards, nose to the ground. He was trailing a doe, went back off, ran off some younger bucks, and so on and so forth. That was at 8 o'clock. Had to leave at 8, went up, showed property. And on my way back, I stopped and I opened up the camera and checked. And sure enough, wouldn't you figure, at 9:15, that stupid buck is in there, you know, an hour and a half after I left. So I thought, okay, well, hey, listen, at least the last 2 days, that buck's been back moving in the mornings. He's obviously looking for does that haven't cycled.
Yep.
So Saturday morning, excuse me, Sunday morning, that was when that front started to move through. Crazy winds, overcast, but at least the temperature was shifting. And the only stand that made sense at all was a Banks blind that I had on the corner, which is kind of in between that thicket, and it kind of bottlenecks down and then goes into that woodlot that we did the TSI.
Yep.
So I went Sunday morning, got in the banks, had the bow and the gun with me, hoping there's two places where they cross there. One is right next to the banks. It's like 25, 30 yards. I
Yep.
do have a bow shot there. The other one where they cross is about 150 to 200 yards down to the south, and then they come up around kind of this thick area we've let into old field management and then cross it about 100 yards in front of you. And so that morning, totally dead. Nothing. Boredom setting in. It's 9:15, 9:20, and I'm just like, what am I doing here? Like, this is heavy winds, just it's just not pleasant. It's actually turning cold, which is at least I wasn't hot, because you know the day before I was sweating in that
For
blind,
sure.
right? But I was checking my cameras constantly. No movement, no movement. Occasionally I was glassing, and man, I got caught with my pants down, and I literally was checking the camera apps, and then I opened up some emails, checking emails, kind of looking around a little bit, but I was kind of falling asleep mentally, right? And I thought, I'm gonna sit till 10, and then I'm gonna get up and I will walk to a couple of different spots, and I'm just gonna stay in glass and whatever. And dude, I looked up from my phone. Right when I looked up, I was sitting right on a cross fence that goes between two old field spots, which is in that kind of that transition zone from that thicket to the timber stand cut. And right when I looked up, I just saw his antlers. And what he had done is jump that fence. I looked up right when he was landing, which was really cool, because all I could see was rack, and immediately I knew it was him. Man, I kicked the camera on. I, in the panic, did not have everything set up with my phone to record the actual shot, so I didn't get it mounted properly. So I wasn't going to risk this, dude. I've never taken a buck off this property, you know, in 5 years. And so I just, man, I laid the gun on his shoulder. He was 85 yards, and rolled him up, and he went down right at, I mean, just he made it 15, 20 yards, laid down at 100 yards. And what's cool is I actually caught the shot on the Reconyx app. So on my camera app, yeah, it was pretty neat, you know. So on my camera app, it you actually see the shot and him rolling up and dragging that leg. So that was really neat. But man, and it was just, I was totally overwhelmed. Absolutely, absolutely just surreal.
That's incredible. Because it, but that's the rut, dude. It happens like that so often, where you're set up in a likely location, a transition between areas of dense cover where you know, hey, a deer's been active, like there's scrapes around here. I've gotten them, pre-rut here. But like, dude, it's feast or famine. And then all of a sudden, dude, it changes in an instant. That's what happened to me this morning. And it's just like, I'm in a good spot. Dude, I could get blanked here, or it could happen. And just like that, it happens. So that's what I love though about the rut is, it's all of a
Yeah,
sudden you're just
it'll
you're
test you, you
oh,
know. It'll
question.
test you, because I'm a camera guy, right? Like, I've just when I first started using them, geez, close to
Young
20
age
years
stuff.
ago, you know, I just have always been. I just love that aspect, right? I
Do
love
too.
tracking deer. I like naming deer. I'm weird. I just enjoy watching them grow and seeing how they do from year to year. And so for me, that camera info is huge. Well, when you stop getting that, man, it is just, it will really tax you
It's mental.
mentally. But it, you know, It's several things I learned through this, right? Like, I'm just really fortunate that I developed a great relationship with the neighbor. Matter of fact, just this morning, as you and I were talking before, man, he sends me video and pictures of 300 feet, like 100 yards in front of his house, two big bucks
Yeah,
fighting. Like, I'm
right.
talking getting after it. One of them
Getting
runs
up.
off with what looks like a broken leg dragging behind him.
Damn.
The big deer is a huge, tall eight. I actually think I have one photo of him where I had a camera down on that creek and he was just crossing, bit really, really, like I'm talking a, 140s type deer,
Yeah.
mid 140s probably. Just a really, really good deer for this area. So, that has become a great relationship. I relied on that information and then combine that with just me relying on the process and understanding that don't press them, don't force it, hunt where you can hunt and understand that it's going to take a little time, even though those cameras have gone cold.
Yeah.
And so for me, dude, it was so fitting too, because that was Sunday morning and he was actually on his way to church, my neighbor. And so he came by and actually got to see the deer,
Oh,
which was
nice.
really cool for him. And,
Yep.
then we filmed the recovery and my best friend ended up coming over and helped me gut him and cape him out. And it was
Right.
just, man, it was just an incredible morning. It was such a reminder of just the blessings of land ownership and just the joy of chasing a deer on your own place. And I don't care, man, if it's a, for me, it's mature deer. I don't care how big their racks are. I've got a seven that shows up randomly out here. That's a big 4-year-old deer. He won't score jack, but he's just this gnarly, skinny, tall, heavy racked deer. He's narrow width, but heavy antlered. And I would be just as tickled, with a deer like that. So mature deer, but whatever those goals are for you, that's the beauty of it, man. It's just
It is.
this, the opportunity to own this dirt, to hunt it, and to harvest the deer off your own place is so,
That's it, dude.
man, it was just, it's just so many things in my life have kind of, led to this point. And then for it to all culminate and come together, dude, it's just a, and the sad thing for me was he lost that velvet. He carried it
Yeah.
all the way till the 29th of October.
Oh,
So
wow.
it was,
Yeah.
man, that thing dangled and I
Ooh.
watched him in a rainstorm one day, 100 yards from my house, stand still for an hour in a downpour, not move a muscle, and just, watching that big chunk of velvet hang there and swing in the wind. So that's, we watched him make a scrape one day. My wife and I filmed him 150 yards in front of the house. It's just, so it was super cool to see all of that go down, know that he was living here, and then be able to harvest him. It was really neat.
Man, that is cool. That's cool. And to know too, like you said, you're 25 to whatever percent, into a plan, into a
Oh,
all.
yeah.
There's a lot of work to still be done. You've gotten big swings done for sure, but there's more to get from the property. But to know that you can have these types of successes and just kind of like in hopes continue with the success and consistency, like dude, that's an exciting place to be sitting at. And like you said, dude, this is like the dream of land ownership, of having a piece of dirt to call your own.
Well, and think about this too. So, in regard to that, right? Okay. So, let's say I've done 25% of what I need to so far. If this is the result of 25%,
Yeah.
what will be the result of 50 or 75 or when I get to 100, right? So, obviously, my goal is to maximize the amount of ground that deer will live and stay on me and to also increase that turkey and quail habitat. And so, those things. Implementing what I have so far, knowing that it gave me the opportunity to have an area where an animal of this magnitude felt comfortable enough to live, where again, in years past, 4 years prior, I didn't have a single mature deer that stayed on my farm for any given time whatsoever. I would
Right.
have 1 or 2 days maybe where they would come through.
Sure.
I had a 7 point last year that was a 4-year-old that kind of stayed on part of my farm on the west end.
Yep.
But it was very inconsistent. He lived more probably on the neighbor than he did me. I had about a week and a half period where he hung out with some hot does in front of the house, but that was pretty much it. So, that's pretty stinking exciting. And so it
Oh,
just
yeah.
gets me that much more motivated to go, okay, what are the next stages? What do I
Yeah.
need to modify? What do I need to, as you mentioned before, double down on? What are some changes I can make based on new recent information to help maximize this? So really exciting going forward. And again, man, just knowing that I'm making those changes and implementing these things on the ground that the good Lord has blessed me with is just that's the motivation, and that's what makes it special.
Yeah, 100%, dude. It really is. And that's my wish for everyone listening to be able to enjoy and partake and improve, be a producer and a consumer of, right, the property, the land, and God's creation. Like that is, man, it's fulfilling, it's satisfying. And I think it's a good fulfillment. Like it's not like one of those things where it's like, man, I'm this is all about me. No, it's not. It's a connection to creation. And
That's right.
that's so rewarding. It feels right. So, dude, congrats. That's awesome. I'm excited for your success. And I know what's to come in the future, for you. It's more and more of this on a piece that you get to call home, live it, breathe it, sell it, all of it, dude. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Pumped.
Yeah.
Pumped
Thank
for
you.
you.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty incredible, dude. And
Absolutely.
obviously, man, it goes without saying, I'm super grateful for you guys and the management plan and the patience with me. Anyone who knows me know I can be a lot, right? There's probably times you get calls and texts and you're just like, oh my Lord,
No,
him again.
no.
But it's it's really awesome to have that, what I would consider to be a partnership.
Yeah.
That second set of eyes, second opinion, someone who's willing to listen, but also be firm in their ideas as well.
Sure.
So it man, it's been so freaking cool to see this thing come full circle.
Good.
Pretty
It's satisfying for me, man. I'm excited and thrilled for you, and I'm looking forward to getting back down there.
I'm ready, dude. I'm ready.
I'm freeing up a little bit now that there's a tag punch. So,
Yeah, hello.
I will. I'll text you when we get off here, but I just appreciate your time and jumping on here and sharing your story. Congrats on the success. And guys, thank you for listening and following along to Zeke's story as well. Hopefully it's encouraging, empowering for you to get out there and do some of the same stuff that he's been doing in an area that's not known for big deer. And as you can see from the title picture here, this is not a small deer that Zeke you harvested. So congrats again, my friend, and thank you all
Thank
for
you.
listening and being a part of the Land Legacy Podcast.
Yeah.